welcome to our February 2022 episode of Talent Talks, a podcast and video series brought to you through the cooperation of the Tallinn City Centre Government, the City Centre New Arrivals Council, and the City of Tallinn, as part of the Tallinn City Centre for New Arrivals project. I'm Chantelle.
And I'm Solis Rose. And we're both part of Tallinn's international community. And we're happy to help you connect to your new city and feel more like a local. And there's nothing more local than celebrating Estonia's Independence Day coming up on the 24th of February. Now, while there are many celebratory events lined up for the day, the presidential speech, for instance, from that to the annual military parade, as well as feasting and dancing planned by, well, all of us, Tallinn Talks will be taking a trip down memory lane, back where it all began, to explore how Estonians managed to keep their independence celebration alive, even during decades of Soviet occupation.
Definitely a discussion to look forward to, but first up, as always, the local news. And at the end of last year, thousands of Talliners were interviewed as part of the Tallinn Satisfaction Survey, which found that 94% of residents are satisfied with Tallinn's living environment. 34% were even very satisfied. The urban cleanliness, the condition of green areas, playgrounds, and health and exercise trails scored the highest at nearly 90% satisfaction. And respondents were most dissatisfied with the level of noise and dust in their neighborhood, but only had 25% of respondents expressing dissatisfaction. Pirita residents are the most satisfied with their district, with a whopping 98% satisfaction. And even the lowest scores, which were seen in Kristiina, still saw 90% satisfaction. And a stat that will be the envy of many cities around the world, over 20% of Talliners reach their main work or school destination in 10 minutes or less, even on a weekday, with over 50% being 20 minutes or less, oh, wow, showing that even with the growth and expansion of the city, commuting times have stayed extremely low for a capital city.
Well, and staying on urban themes, a recent publication by the European Environment Agency ranked Tallinn in the top 10 of European capitals in terms of the extent of green infrastructure, coming in 7th in terms of urban green space and 8th in terms of urban tree cover. Tallinn is due to become the European Green Capital of 2023, and the city's 2023 development strategy sets a target of at least 65% of Tallinn's land surface being natural. Now, great examples of the project in play include the upcoming 14-kilometer park on the Pollinator Highway, as well as the Cleanly Park on the Lasnamäe Clifftop, which we explored in more detail in our last episode.
And to continue developing our wonderful city, the European Investment Bank has signed a 100 million euro loan agreement with the City of Tallinn for its multi-year investment program in urban infrastructure. Staying on the theme of integrated, sustainable urban renewal, the loan will be used in renovating schools, vocational schools, social housing, as well as improving sustainable mobility in the city with upgraded bicycle routes, pedestrian pathways, and existing streets. Since 1993, the EIB has invested more than 3.5 billion in Estonian projects, ranging from the modernization of Tallinn Airport to providing funding for small and medium-sized enterprises and innovative tech companies in the country.
Now, in March, and after delays due to the ongoing pandemic, free museum Sundays will be launched in Tallinn to give free admission into many museums around the city on the first Sunday of every month. The program will initially involve all branches of Tallinn City Museums, being the Tallinn City Life Museum, the Photo Museum in the former town prison, Tallinn's first community museum in Kalamaja, the Mia Mila Children's Museum in Kadriorg, the Peter the First House Museum, the Cake in the Kirk Fortification Museum, and the Tallinn Russian Museum. Included in this list are three Tallinn literary museums in Kadriorg, namely Vilde Museum, Tamsara Museum, and Tallinn's newest museum, the Matti Unt Museum. The last 2 years have had a big impact on the museum and cultural participation. So visit tallinn.ee/museum-sunday and be sure to head out to your local museum this March.
And while we'll talk extensively about the anniversary of Estonia's independence shortly, an even older Estonian icon will celebrate its anniversary soon. The Town Hall Pharmacy, or Rheaptek in Tallinn, is the oldest active pharmacy in Europe, and 2022 will mark 600 years since its first written mention. It's the oldest operating healthcare institution in Estonia, and back in the day was kind of like a cafe, where people socialized while drinking sparkling wine or tea. The Rheaptek was also a meeting place for town hall lords and other important people, so it's believed to have a really big influence in Tallinn's history. 17th century customers could buy 54 types of water, 25 fats, 128 different oils, alongside medicines which were derived from burnt bees, stallion hooves, burnt hedgehogs, earthworm oil, and bleached dog feces, with much, much more.
Okay. Interesting,
yeah.
Back in the day. Yeah. Medicine definitely has come far, hasn't it?
Right.
Well, today the pharmacy works hand in hand with the museum, and pharmacy customers can visit the museum room to experience the history or purchase a bottle of the famous 16th century spiced wine claret. The museum organizes tours and workshops for both children and adults and takes an active part in the Tallinn medieval days, Old Town Days, and is also open on museum night.
And another birthday. So the Estonian Language House in Tallinn recently celebrated 4 years of providing language support to the residents of Tallinn, including consultation on options to learn Estonian, language lessons, language cafes, culture swaps, and events to practice. Check out the new Facebook page at facebook.com/ Tallinna Eesti Keele Maja, launched as part of the celebrations.
Now, speaking of languages, are you or do you know someone between the ages of 18 to 25 with good written and verbal English? Do you have a keen interest in helping shape a sustainable future for Tallinn? 2022 is the European Year of the Youth, and the city of Espoo is launching a program for mentors for the future, having mayors engaging with young mentors selected from their respective cities to listen to their dreams, to listen to their expectations, as well as find out their fears about the future. Now, this program aims to increase the involvement of young people in the decision-making about issues that affect their cities.
And one of the young mentors will have the opportunity to be part of Tallinn's delegation to the annual meeting of Eurocities in Espoo, Finland, from the 8th to the 10th of June. You must be willing to participate in at least 3 meetings with other young people and a politician representing the city throughout the spring, and participate in online discussions with mentors from all of the other cities. To apply, submit an application form and a CV and a motivational letter in English on the topic How to Adapt to Climate Change and Move Towards a Sustainable Future by the 28th of February. See contact details on the Tallinn City website.
All right. And whilst you're at it, Tallinn is also a UNESCO City of Music that since October 2021 made official this year. And the city has opened a call for applications to support the next round of music events for 2022. In the first music grant round of the year, Tallinn awarded over €53,000 to 11 music projects, including a 12-hour musical, lyrical and choreography event coming this September along the city walls and towers, performed by Tallinn music students. Also, the 16th International Guitar Festival to be held in June, the Tallinn Wind Band and Strings Festival, the upcoming 40th edition of the Estonian Jazz Union's International Rhythm Music Festival, and live and electronic music events at Sveta Bar. The deadline for submitting the next round of applications is 10th of March 2022, and winners will be announced 1 month later. For more details on the submission process, see the Tallinn City website.
And lastly, if like me, your camera is never too far away, the photo competition Year Round in Tallinn has started again, aiming to capture the beauty and the changes of the Tallinn cityscape throughout the year. You can submit up to 4 photos throughout the year via the competition website until November the 15th. Black, white, color, from your camera, your iPhone, but the photo must have been taken during 2022. Qualifying images will be displayed until the 1st of December. A public vote will elect the public favorite, as well as formal judging by the commission to select the main winner and special prizes. And an exhibition of the best photos will be made in the Tunnel of Freedom Square. So get snapping as the city quickly transforms over the coming months.
Well, get snapping. I do have a camera now, so maybe I'll
there
just
you go.
Try.
There you go.
I'll come for some tips from you.
Exactly. Happy to help.
On the 24th of February 1918, the Salvation Committee publicly declared the small Baltic nation of Estonia an independent and democratic republic. From then until Soviet occupation in 1940, the 24th of February has been observed as the day of independence and a national holiday. Now, this year, in 2022, it will mark 104 years since Estonia declared statehood. And while there is an impressive lineup of events, including the military parade, concerts, flag hoisting, feasting and general merrymaking, this episode on Tallinn Talks will take a walk down memory lane to explore how Estonians continued to hold this day dear, even through decades of Soviet occupation. Now, we'll also delve into the impact this might have had on patriotism and overall feelings towards their country then and now. Now, to help us delve into this is Indrek Tarand, who is a former member of the European Parliament as well as the European Green Party. Now, Tarand has served as an advisor to the Prime Minister of Estonia and also as the Secretary General of the Estonian Ministry of Foreign Affairs. Our second guest is Alexander Metsimat. He's an art historian and curator who has worked both in the Art Museum and the Estonian Museum of History. Now, currently, he's mostly occupied with writing art critique and finishing his MA in the Estonia Academy of Arts. Thank you very much, gentlemen, for joining us today.
Thank you.
Okay, so we're going to look at this as a bit of like a history lesson, but like not too heavy, even though it's kind of going to go in that area, okay? From the 1940s till about the early 1990s, Estonia was occupied by a foreign power. I mean, this is, everyone knows this. Now, how did Estonians find a way to still observe their independence? Or did they even?
If you allow me, I would make a very easy and simple history.
Go ahead. This
line.
Is why we're here.
Estonia is a unique country because in 20th century, such a small nation managed to become independent twice. And the first time was obviously even more heroic, I would say, because, you know, we had a war with most powerful powers in Europe, Germany and Russia, and we won. Germany has tried twice to win a war on two fronts, never succeeded.
Yeah.
We did.
Don't tell the Germans.
So basically, of course, the memories of the first period of independence were quite vivid. Mm. And most of the people, I think, didn't allow the Soviet authorities to erase completely the knowledge about real history. However, the efforts to force population to think differently and adopt the Soviet narrative were also enormous. They had lots of resources, all sorts of party secretaries and politruk. So, in a way, in 1980s, we gradually became to be very much afraid of that if that Soviet occupation continues, we may not survive. Mm. But finally, the time was ripe.
The time was ripe indeed. Let's talk about, you did mention, and I think everyone would agree that indeed Estonia is a unique country. How do you think the people managed to just keep that together? And like you were mentioning about the erasure, how do you, in such a situation, what are the kinds of things that you would have to do to ensure that you're still holding on to your history, you're still holding on to the culture, you're still holding on to the teachings from, you know, your forefathers in order not to disappear?
Well, for instance, not all the books, they're burned by the Soviets because they did the same thing. They burned the books they didn't like. But almost every family, or at least every second family, had something at grandmother's or grandfather's attic. So you could read, for instance, the very same history of a War of Independence. Mm-hmm. Or you could have pre-war newspapers or school textbooks. And so basically you had some reading data. And the fun part of that was that huge part of Estonian literature even was banned by the Soviets because the authors were not so much liked. And so the interesting activity was to copy those illegal books, to share them with friends, you know, and being aware that maybe the special services are paying attention to your activities, it made it even more fun, so to say.
Danger.
Yeah. And the other side, of course, was that we learned to treat the Soviet authority and the collaboration with the Soviet authorities, to treat it with some kind of, through some kind of irony prism or with a special type of black humor. So that helped, I think.
I see. Now, you keep saying we. Are you saying we as in an Estonian
yeah.
or your own personal
No,
experience?
No, no, we as
a country.
As people, as a country. Okay. And, yeah, we. I mean, it wasn't like... I want to underline here that on the surface, yeah, we had 50,000 Estonians as members of the Communist Party of the Soviet Union. 50,000.
Okay.
But still, most of us were not. And even though it was difficult to speak about things, or impossible even, to speak about things as we were and about our rights or so on, but... it was honorable still to do it, so to say. It's a kind of resistance or something like that. And we still actually have these impulses coming from the Soviet period, because sometimes we get very angry on each other. Hey, you have no right to say that because you were a leader of a communist organization. So that still affects us.
Okay. Now, let's talk about, if you can, Alexander, if you can comment on this. Let's talk about how you would this situation would have impacted the way Estonians would have felt about themselves. Would it have had promoted like a sense of pride and you know holding on, or would it have dampened their spirit?
I think that Estonian identity has always been a really cultural thing because you know if you'd really like to trace your independence back to its you know deep roots, you'd end up at the year 1810. When serfdom was ended and when you, you know, first got an opportunity to move, actually, you know, live and make your own life in many respects. And from that point on, actually, a really important thing for Estonians to define, you know, was what is our culture? From, you know, 1840s when we started our first, you know, studied Estonian communities up until the 1870s when we first started, you know, getting Estonian students at Tartu University. Getting them to, you know, build their own cultural identity. For example, in 1870s, when they first started to, you know, read the Estonian national epic compiled in the 1850s, we didn't even have enough words in our own language to, you know, have an educated conversation as we're having right now. So our culture was, you know, built, you know, brick by brick, person by person. And I think that because of that, you know, Sovietization during the occupation didn't have, you know, that much effect as you might even imagine on the people because, you know, building our culture in, you know, communities, in organizations, you know, tightening it, families or friendships was something that we, you know, already had an experience in for a whole century even. So, you know, memories were well kept. For example, my grandfather during the Soviet times, you know, always hid his flag in the attic. Only brought it out, you know, from my mother's side, and they brought it out during the 24th. My grandmother was always really, really worried, you know, oh my God, what could happen now? And you know, my mother says that she doesn't remember what was talked about, but even, you know, speeches were given and everything was really celebratory is maybe the wrong word, but even, you know, religious kind of. Religious is also.
Yeah, but religion is another aspect. We are actually the last pagan country in
but this
you're quite proud
pride.
Of that title.
I am, yeah. Some others are not.
But civic pride, maybe.
Okay.
Which wasn't really like lost during the occupation in that sense.
Exactly.
And fun fact, the same flag can be right now actually be seen in the Estonian History Museum. If you go inside the exposition and go into the second hall, I think, it was the same one used during the first announcement of the first Estonian Republic.
Interesting.
Yes, Estonian Republic was actually first announced 1918, mm-hmm. 23rd of December, actually, yeah. at Pärnu Endla Theatre, because, as you before said, Estonia was, you know, always caught between two ferns. Mm-hmm. There was the Germans and there were, you know, Russians on the other yeah. side. And actually, their independence was jurisprudently, I think I'm saying it in English, but juristically announced, because we had this short time window, you know, during the time before, you know, Russians came in, but when the Germans were leaving. Mm. And Estonian intelligentsia and national fathers, you know, actually used the opportunity to, you know, celebrate it with a flag. And
yeah, we were ready
okay.
in many ways mm-hmm. to accomplish the establishing of an independent republic, democratic republic. And also in 91, strangely, again the elites at least, but also broader folks, were ready to shrug off the Soviet occupation and create something which we had missed for half a century. So yeah, we were lucky.
Wow. You call it luck.
But speaking about flags, if you allow
me. Well, I was actually going to go there.
Actually, again, another unique fun fact is that, many people believe in the legend. They know the person who made the first American flag. Mm-hmm. And we know the legends that the Hungarian king got mm-hmm. it from the god himself, and the Danish flag mm-hmm. came down here in Tallinn. And then the Danish troops won ours. But so basically we have given birth to three flags, the Danish one, then our own, mm-hmm. blue, black and white. And of course the Latvian students who were studying also in Tartu University. They said, okay, Estonian students are having flag. We need to have a flag.
So that inspired a Latvian flag as well.
Yeah. No, basically we can claim that we have a home of three different flags.
That's interesting.
But he mentioned the original blue, black and white. Of course, the Soviets wanted to destroy it all, and they managed. But on the other hand, many, many people, numerous, I would say, like his grandfather or somebody else's grandfather or mother, the flags were hidden. Yeah. And it was technically punished. It was a crime under the Soviet regime.
I see.
But of course, people, I commit this crime because it's a valuable thing to do, because it shows I'm not giving up the hope.
Okay.
And in my family, the story was a little bit different. We couldn't bring a blue, black and white flag on 24th of February or on any other day, because my great-grandfather, who worked in Ministry of Interior, mm-hmm. and he was in charge every day to raise the blue, black and white flag on the big Hermann Tower every morning, with a sunset rays, every evening with a sunset. And in 1940, of course, they were kicked out. And but he had these used flags of Tall Hermann in their living. And so basically, after the war under Stalin, the life was really miserable, poor. They were sent to Siberia. Mm. So his sister made the school clothing for my aunt and from the flag. And they were doing it but she needs clothing to go to school. So what do? We cut it and sew aprons and things like that.
Fabric.
So I didn't have my own personal blue, black and white during the Soviet times, but I knew people who had.
That is definitely, wow, that's a captivating story. With the Estonian flag, what does it represent in terms of black, blue, and white? What is it?
He's art historian. He should answer that.
So let's talk to the art historian.
Well, the Estonian flag, was given birth to by the Estonian Student Society.
Okay.
So it didn't actually, take birth as a national flag, mm-hmm. But as a flag for, Estonian, young intelligentsia who wanted to...
Cultural aspirations.
Cultural aspirations, mm-hmm. who wanted to, be be at a society, be together, have our own culture. And actually, the flags, you know, three colors have quite a simple meaning. The blue representing the blue sky.
Oh, okay.
You know,
so the sky.
Our aspirations, you know, educationally, culturally.
The future.
The future. Uh-huh. The black is, you know, as a representation of our black past, as a representation of our heritage from, you know, the countryside.
Slavery. All sorts of bad things.
1810s, you know, people who started, you know, to work out of the concept of the flag in the 1880s, you know, their grandfathers and grandmothers basically were, you know, serfs or, you know, slaves in common parlance, basically. And the white represents the hope for a better future. And I remember, actually...
Some would argue it's Nordic. Snowy.
Snow.
There's a debate still going on.
It would make sense.
But
I mean,
we
have a lot of snow.
The students needed this flag because the German student organizations had them.
Flag.
And the main was, we're not any kind of worse kind of people. We want to be equal with them.
Yeah.
And that, in order to become equal, okay, we must have lots of scientific cultural achievements, but also we need to have the same insignia like they do. And this is how it sort of came. And then, because of this cultural revolution, I would even say, and success of that, the flag was become to symbolize the whole nation. But finally, of course, in the War of Independence, it served as a real banner.
Yeah, motivation.
Yeah, and then after that, it was decreed by the parliament that this is going to be our state flag. The original, the first one, is in Tartu.
Okay.
150-something years.
50.
Same
zero.
Colors or?
Yeah, same. Okay, the colors, because the story is interesting. In 1940, they had to hide it. And they put it into the, there was a house in construction and the chimney was going to be built and they put it into the foundation of this chimney and it survived there all the Soviet occupation. It was a top secret. Only four guys from the society knew it.
Interesting.
Two of them were in Canada and two of them here. So, and it was kind of like a reliquia.
A relic.
So, and it had to be, of course, treated after being in this ground. But it was done and it's still in the exposition. It's one of the, let's say, one of the few sacred things we keep from this country.
Okay.
It was actually really cute during the 20s, you know, after the independence was actually announced. And, you know, right now you can go to Wikipedia, find the exact blue color that you have, the exact black and so on. But during the first Estonian Republic in the 1920s, you know, people actually didn't have the right kind of blue. So there are actually, you know...
Different shades of blue.
You know, everybody wanted to have a national flag, but we didn't have...
Finally, one Estonian immigrant was so stubborn, he demanded the United Nations to define the Estonian blue in terms of physics, in the length of the wave.
Mm-hmm.
But it brings me to the year of 1988.
Okay.
I was then a student. And we decided that we will use blue, black and white colors separately because we didn't dare to put them together as a flag, but we thought that maybe we trick the Soviet authorities by using them separately.
Yeah.
And of course the material, the only material which under Perestroika was available were the sheets of a bed.
Bed sheets.
Okay, white, clear. Black, also easy. You have a black color and you turn it into a black. But then the blue, complicated. But a friend of mine, his wife came in and said, I have a skirt exactly, you know, basically.
Like this. So she doing her skirt.
She basically, no hesitation. And a flag it came.
All right, the skirt that became a flag. And then the flag that became a school uniform.
Yeah.
You know, there is a bit of a connection there. Now, let's come a bit more forward and then let's talk about independence as in what it represents in terms of the two sides. I mean, Soviet occupation, obviously there were Russians who lived here. This became their home. this is still their home for like about 30% of the population. And how was there an issue with regards to celebrating or marking this day? And was there any friction? How did that feel?
Well, the end of the Soviet Union, for many millions of Russians, came as a bad surprise. Okay. They were not prepared to lose the 1/6 of their territory of the planet and so on and so on. And of course, in their interpretation, even if they're not believers of the communist ideas, Soviet Union was a force of good.
Yeah,
and it collapses.
Them. Yeah.
And we have some kind of, I mean, they didn't say it often openly, but basically they treated us as some kind of Nazi, whatever, resurrection. And the relations were very, very tense.
When you say tense, give us like some examples of how tense it was.
I mean, it was very tense. Not that tense like in Ukrainian TV right now.
Okay.
We didn't fight because public fight never occurred. Okay. And also, we were lucky because people died in Latvia and in Lithuania in 91. But we were... It happened that we didn't have to lose any human life in this. But basically, there was no common ground actually to be found, because there was a certain kind of self-inflicted segregation.
That
Russians worked in factories, and in Estonians slowly but steadily moved away to work in other places. So basically, there was no normal interaction under the Soviet.
Okay.
And suddenly, okay, here we are. What shall we do? And this is why we had problems in the region of northeastern Estonia, where they basically even aspired for certain kind of autonomy or separation.
Narva,
yeah. I just was there yesterday, so I remember that period quite well. And of course, there was... I mean, when I was in the Soviet army, I was forced to speak in Russian, yeah? Mm-hmm. And the Russification was also a sort of policy in Soviet times. Under Brezhnev, they introduced more and more Russian at schools and at the universities, and they forced our scientists to write their theses in Russian, not in Estonian, so on and so on. On the other hand, the Russians who had moved here, they were never seriously forced to learn Estonian. And I mean, it was standard practice. Говорите по-человечески. If I wanted to speak Estonian to my friend, for example, no, it's not allowed. You speak in
Russian.
Human language.
Which was Russian.
Which was Russian. Officially, it was called the language of international friendship.
The language of international friendship.
Yeah.
Okay.
It was... instead of lingua franca. I must give credit also to those people who were forced or voluntarily came to live here under the Soviets. They kept some limits. And I mean, of course, we were arguing about whether Estonia should be independent or not, and under which conditions, what kind of rights should be the Soviet people given, but we were insisting on the legal continuity. So we had this kind of citizenship problems, and which were politically very heated. But they also behaved. They never came out like just bashing their opponent or something like that. So, there's even a story or sort of not so scientific explanation, but they say that the Baltic Russians in Latvia and Estonia are somewhat different from the Russian Russians.
Is it because of the dilution of culture?
Because of interaction of different culture.
Okay. Yeah, you're saying Alexander?
Sorry, even they themselves see them, you know, quite differently, I'd say. Because, well, you know, how you were speaking, you know, Estonians and Russians lived separately during the Soviet times, so on, so on. This segregation continued, but, you know, we still live in the same city, we still go to the same schools, so on and so on. And for example, when you had your experience at the Russian army, when you were supposed to speak Russian and a common tongue and so on, then actually I'd say that Estonian army right now is one of the best integration projects I've seen,
right,
in the entirety of Europe, because I've served with guys whose mother tongue is Russian, who themselves speak Russian way better than they ever spoke Estonian, but who say that, come on, what are you even saying? This is my home country, of course I will fight for it. So I think that, the dialectic between, Russians, them, and Estonians, us, has, really become something more fictitious during the last
years. So those lines are blurring.
It's also blurred, I'd say. The collapse of the Soviet Union gives Estonians also the opportunity to behave better. Mm. While freeing us from the obligation to be against and fight for your life. Mm. So we can be quite reasonable in understanding the worries and concerns of other people. And we are not speaking only about Russians, because the Soviet legacy contains Ukrainians, Belarusians, Armenians, you name them. So basically, we picked one of the great values of 1920s, which is the law of cultural autonomy. And it is applied, and everybody is free in legal terms to pursue its cultural development and interests. So, in a way, I would give credit also to Estonians. We didn't behave badly as well, because, I myself, I could say, hey, you killed that relative, you deported that relative, you forced my family to flee, blah, blah, blah.
I want a revenge. No retaliation.
Yeah, I need a retaliation, but we didn't ask for that. So I think our leaders.
Is it the general sentiment, or more of like the majority of the sentiment was that, people did not want to retaliate?
It was controlled.
It was controlled.
It was controlled.
They felt it.
One thing was it was controlled, but the second thing was that a lot of Russians actually came to here, came here to work, or they got jobs here. They didn't come here as let's go on a cultural mission to Estonia, but they came here because, I got an apartment here. I moved to here with my family and so on.
Yeah, but so in the aftermath of the Second World War, you have to calculate in that tens of thousands of Estonians were deported.
As well.
So that's how you get a free living space.
True, because so if it's empty then.
Yeah, so basically these kind of feelings also were vivid or alive, but the Estonian leaders of this period, I think, were very reasonable and smart, and also polite. And they somehow found this formula. Speaking about international sort of situation, of course, Boris Yeltsin, as a president of Russia, had an impact on the community. But I like to bring this comparison. Then France, out of all countries, gave up its powers in Algeria. So people in France sort of accepted that, this is the tide of history, this should happen.
Let go of your territories and whatnot.
But the French people living in Algeria, the most bitterly opposed in their majority. And in 90s, we had this similar sort of effect here.
Yes.
But people in Moscow, or in particular St. Petersburg, relax. We are never going to attack you or liberate. But here, the spirit was, hey, we want the Soviet Union back. I mean, here in Estonia, still, those who have Russian passports, they vote for Mr. Putin in higher percentages than Putin ever gets in his own district.
What do you think would contribute to this? Is it that maybe those in that position would you would say that they are in a position of benefiting from that situation and so would oppose it? Or
I think it's a sort of imperialist nostalgia.
Okay.
It's because they regard Putin as
the grass always seems greener from outside, so to speak.
Okay, right. Let's. We did say that it was going to be slightly heavy, still informative.
It's too heavy.
No, still informative. But now let's make it slightly lighter. In the independence celebration, I'm an expat. I'm from Ghana. I've been in Tallinn for 2 years. Other people have been here for a longer time. We have a huge expat population. people love Estonia for a lot of reasons, and valid reasons, and
would like to celebrate
with you.
Okay.
What do we do? Tell us, how can we support you?
My first suggestion is, again, we are unique in many ways, but we are also unique in our stubborn stupidity.
And
we invented the tradition that on 24th of February, on the day of independence, we start with the rising of a flag.
Yes.
And by the law, it needs to be raised when the sun comes up. So it's 7:30.
Yeah, 7:30.
So basically, and it's cold, and it's windy. and we still, people, it's not a sort of compulsion. People want to come here. There are two songs, two short speeches, and the flag goes up.
Interesting.
And I've been there almost every year. And I always know a lot of foreigners coming there. Okay, it started with a diplomatic corps. It was a torture for them, but they had to wake up early and come there. Mm. And there are more and more foreigners who join us. We really appreciate it. But look, you respect us because even in our stupidity.
But if you're an expat, then a thing to do if you have an Estonian, you know, person who you know like at least a bit, you should ask if you like. Hey, can I maybe come to your family and just be together at the table and so on? Because, you know, that's the real Estonian experience.
But which is what I was going to come to. If I do come to go to my Estonian best friend's house with to spend time with her family, what would I have to expect by way of, say, a traditional Estonian drink or a traditional Estonian meal or something that is more like that you eat or drink on Independence Day that you'd say is unique to Estonia? Is there something like that?
If you're a vegetarian, it's going to be really difficult.
You know, we have this,
thankfully, I'm not, but there are other people who might be vegetarian and vegan.
We are not necessarily famous for our cuisine, but,
true.
But definitely something...
I didn't say that.
Some kind of food is available.
Okay.
And I don't know why, but it appears that the hit of the day is, you know, this small fish, like a Baltic anchovies or something like that. It's kilu in Estonia.
Oh, okay, the tiny
Yeah. So basically you have bread covered with that. Yeah, the black bread.
Black bread.
Yeah.
So black bread covered with tiny fish.
Yeah, some egg perhaps.
And boiled or fried egg.
Boiled
egg, black bread, fish.
So it's like a small thing.
Like
and then you probably get treated with an honorary shot to independence.
What would this shot be? A vodka?
Or it can be homemade even sometimes.
Homemade?
You know,
actually,
it's a tradition.
What is really cool, I've always said that Estonia has this sort of a small plates culture.
Yeah.
Very in the fancy dinners, we have a lot of small plates with, you know, stuff on it. And, you know, one thing is, you know, rye bread and, you know, this classic small fish and, you know, and a hunk of pig, something along those lines. But what is really excellent, or really, you know, sweet, if you can notice, is are the pickled things. Because, you know, you pickle things for a whole year. Pickle your, I don't know, anything from pickles to tomatoes to these sorts of, you know, paradise apples. And actually, if you're in a homely setting, then this is sort of a really sweet thing to see. How, you know, these self-made things are bought out every year during the winter when you have absolutely nothing around except for snow and really bad weather. So I think that might be a thing to appreciate, even as a vegan.
Yeah, and perhaps you even don't get enough food on that occasion.
Okay.
But you should be prepared that perhaps in the company normally somebody is like a first singer, so you could sing some sometimes patriotic songs, sometimes fun songs together, and probably the stories will be told. We are still like children. We like fairy tales and stories.
You're talking about patriotic songs. What? I mean, you don't have to be an amazing singer. Just give us an idea of, is it like the anthem?
Yeah, well, anthem is a sort of official one. Yeah. But there are a number of, like the flag song, for instance.
There's a flag song?
Yeah, it's about blue, black and white as the colors of...
Go on.
And there are many of them.
Really?
There are actually, there's a song, the Estonian flag, there's a...
My fatherland, my love.
Yeah, no, siis on see kaunistagem Eestiko. There are a number of... Some of them date back from the Romantic period of the 19th century. Some of them were created in 1980s, 1990s. And I mean, every whatever serious the level of seriousness of a party, you can have fun songs.
Okay.
I think if you search in YouTube for like Estonian Independence Day playlist, you can probably find something that has, you know, pictures of, you know, a cold sea and then, you know, the songs coming behind it.
So you're basically saying you're not going to try to sing the flag song for us?
We are not prepared, to do it right now. We didn't take
We'll do that off camera.
Off camera, as much as you wish.
Okay.
And, but he's right. But the celebration, in a way, is like a family or clan-based or something like that. And it is because in the countryside, it could be also, I mean, it shouldn't be in the main opera theater, but like a reception for important people. Mm-hmm. It could be also in the local centers. And so it would be, people could take more direct connectivity to these festivities. Otherwise it becomes, there's a threat in my opinion, that it may become too serious and celebrated only, so to say, by certain ranks, which it was never meant to be. It is a whole country's holiday.
Let's talk about, museums. Like, let's say, for those who might not get the opportunity to maybe go, maybe they don't have any Estonian families to spend time with. They are more like, like to take photos or want to just explore Tallinn or, you know, all the, their respective cities. Is there anything happening with the museums? Any viewings that?
Well, if you're interested in history, then two main things. Right next to the Freedom Square, where the parade is, is a Vabaamu, or Freedom Museum, so to speak.
Vabaamu.
Like free in Estonia is Vaba.
Vaba.
And museum is Muuseum. So Vabaamu, combination of Freedom Museum.
Freedom Museum. Okay.
And they have exhibitions and tours covering mostly the last 30 years. More from a sociological angle, so to speak. But if you really want to see, you know, have a day at the museum, so to speak, and, you know, visit different things, then me, myself, I'd suggest visiting Estonian History Museum at Maarjamäe in Pirita. Maarjamäe, yes.
The former residence of Count Orlov.
Oh, okay.
On the seaside.
At Pirita, right?
Yeah, at Pirita.
I think museums are opened on 24th.
The History Museum and the Vabaamu both are, and both have, you know, special programs running throughout the day, so you can leave your, you know, key at the children's playground and actually, you know, enjoy an hour of, you know.
I don't know, for younger people, there are all sort of collections and activities going on. There's a Fotografiska here behind it. So basically, there is a definitely a choice what you could do, and probably I hope the museum treat you friendly.
You get a really good overview of, you know, what has happened, dates and so on. And for a culture experience, you know, pack yourself in, you know, we're a big park and so on, but visit the open air museum.
Okay.
Because it actually has, you know, Estonian architecture, you know, coming back from the time we all still lived at farms. And you can, like, really get a good picture of the Estonian life being, so to speak.
Okay.
And, you know, it's also a good day outside. You know, you finish there, you've been there for 2 or 3 hours, and you think, oh, my God.
Before this virus thing started, you could also have a good possibility to get integrated into something interesting while walking in the old town. I mean, you could... People... On 24th of February, I think even Estonians are
not sure
relatively
open.
Friendly and
more open.
Open, yeah.
So thank you so very much for joining us today. I mean, we could have this conversation for hours, but this is all time would allow.
Thank you.
Okay. All right. So that's basically how we wrap up today on Tallinn Talks. And here's what to expect on the 24th of February, Independence Day. Now, the anniversary will kick off with the ceremonial hoisting of the flag at the Tor Herman Tower during sunrise, followed by a ceremony at 7:30 a.m. So you have to wake up. It's going to be cold, probably wet, probably slippery, but you need to be careful. But it will definitely be worth your while. Now, last year, the parade of the Defence Forces was cancelled due to COVID-19. Now, this year, the parade returns and will take place at the Freedom Square or Vabadusevayak from 12 noon and will be received by the President of the Republic, Ala Karis. Now, the units of the United Kingdom of Great Britain and Northern Ireland and the French Republic that belong to NATO, the NATO-Estonian Battle Group, will also take part in the parade. Now, if you're interested, then you can also get the opportunity to take a closer look at the fighting equipment of the Defence Forces and, of course, Estonian allies from 1:30 to 3:30 p.m. Now, remember, you can access the exhibition's area only with a valid vaccination certificate. Masks are also mandatory, so be responsible. And also, as expected, all these activities will come with some changes in traffic management in the city centre. Areas around the Freedom Square and several sections of roads will be closed off to the general public. Now, transport routes will be rerouted and a few hundred parking spaces will also be closed in various parts of the area. And due to the pandemic, the traditional president's reception will not take place this year. As we mentioned earlier, the president's speech and the concert performance will be held in an empty hall of the Estonian Theatre. Now, this will be telecast live on ETV. And that's how we wrap up Talent Talks here. My name is Solis Rose Korte. Thank you very much for watching.